The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf, your source for total wealth management. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of Roe, his guests, and callers. Now let's begin the show. Here's your host, Roe Diefendorf.
Thanks for joining us once again on Three-Dimensional Wealth. And today I've got Chuck Martin back with me. And the reason is Chuck has a new book out entitled Smarts, Are We Hardwired for Success? And I just finished reading the book this weekend, Chuck. I loved it. I know that it's getting great reviews at Amazon.com, but I want to thank you for joining us this hour.
Oh, always good to be here, Roe.
Well, good. Let me give a little background for anyone that's listening and sort of fill in. Chuck is the chairman and CEO of NFI Research, and this is a firm that analyzes business and management trends. He's a highly sought-after speaker, and tough for us to book him in this hour slot. He's also a New York Times business bestseller author. He's got 7 business books to his credit, including Tough Management and Coffee at Luna's, which we talked about on this show before. Now, the co-authors of this book with you are Peg Dawson. She's got her doctorate in education. She's a psychologist, and she's up at the Center for Learning and Attention Disorders up in New Hampshire. And also Richard Guare. Is that how you pronounce it?
Richard Guare.
Guare, who's a Ph.D. and a neuropsychologist. And he's a director up at the Seacoast Mental Health Center in Portsmouth. Great book. I want to ask you, though, as we open this thing. Well, first let me read. I want to read, I think, an intriguing part of sort of an intro thing. It says, baffled by employees' behaviors, frustrated by personal shortfalls. Well, I got both of those answered, yes. Okay. Well, the New York Times business best-selling author Chuck Martin shows how to understand and work exceptionally well with strengths and weaknesses. And then they give you sort of 3 little points here. Here's one. A rising corporate star gets promoted and then crashes in a new position. We've seen that. A manager wonders why an employee can't complete what seems like a simple task. And a company selects 5 of its best and brightest to develop a new product, and it never gets off the ground. Well, everyone is familiar with confounding workplace scenarios like these. The common problem is not lack of training or lack of motivation, but a mismatch between the person and the skills the situation requires. What's lacking is an understanding of cognitive functions that largely determines why some people succeed with remarkable ease and some people continuously struggle and fail in spite of their education, dedication, and hard work. Well, now, that's what Smarts is about, is how to put these things, bring out into the light some of the strengths, some of the weaknesses, and how to get around it. So having said all that, I want to ask you, how did you come up with this topic, Chuck?
Yeah, it wasn't my sort of mainstream thing. It was sort of a fluke. Before I did Coffee at Luna's and Tough Management, my last 2 books, I actually came across these 2 psychologists who have another book out for teachers and clinical psychologists that deals with what are called executive skills. And I looked at the content of this, and I asked these people, I said, why don't you bring this knowledge to the business world? Because this brain research, it's based on 40 years of neuroscience brain research, and it's about executive skills and cognitive function, which I'll talk about in a minute. But they said, well, we think it should be a business book too, but we don't really deal in that arena, so we don't really deal with business, we deal with other clinical psychologists. And it turns out that this knowledge about how the brain works and cognitive function and so forth is really common knowledge in clinical psychology. It's just not known by normal people like you and me, and business people. So what we did is, I actually thought about it for about a year, and then after I did Tough Management and Coffee at Luna's, I went back to them. I said, let's talk about this some more. And we started to get some concrete ideas about how to bring it to the business world. And then we did research across our base at NFI Research, the 2,000 people we survey every 14 days. We started surveying them to basically to crystallize what the problems were in business And it turns out that these cognitive functions are really the solution. So that's how it came about. It was really a fluke, and I just came across these people who had another book in this category and just weren't in the business world.
I'll tell you, it plays into sort of behavioral finance is one of the buzzwords coming about. And, in fact, in our curriculum at Three Dimensional Wealth, one of our courses is actually on behavioral finance, and it's all about the brain and how it fires off and, you know, why people react in different situations and how the cortex fires off. And unless you know that and have some kind of appreciation for it, as an advisor, you may not really interact or do the right thing for the client or understand what they're going through. So we're trying to incorporate that right into the practices of three-dimensional wealth advisors.
Right. That's a good point. When I first looked at this, I was a little bit skeptical. As are some people. You start saying, wait a minute, this can't really be how the brain works. This is just really how I am. Well, it turns out it really is how the brain works. And people are very familiar with the left and right brains because everyone's been talking about that for years. But they aren't so familiar with the frontal lobes, which mm-hmm. is the part of your brain right behind your forehead. And in your frontal lobes are these 12 specific skills. And they named them executive skills years ago, the psychology, which is just a dreadful name, because as soon as you say executive skills, people think, oh, you mean skills of executives. Well, the way psychologists think, executive skills, they call them that because that's how you execute through
right.
your brain. And the brain for them is viewed as the central executive. They don't really think of executives as people, as managers. They really look at brains in that context. So it's kind of a... You have to really get the language first when you start talking about skills. It's not really the skill of how to learn how to, you know, chop down a tree or something. These are really cognitive functions or executive skills. And every person has 12 of these skills built into the frontal lobes of their brain. And these are things like time management, flexibility, task initiation, focus, self-restraint, and so forth. And everybody has two or three that are their strongest, two or three that are their weakest. And they're really not dramatically changeable by the time you become an adult, which is really stunning.
That is amazing. The one thing I was, when I read through this, I go, why 12? I mean, couldn't there have been 15, or why not only 5? I mean,
well,
who comes up with 12? That's what I want.
You'll love this. The publisher said, well, can you make it 7? because 7's a better number. And we get this a lot, by the way. And we say, well, we can't make it 7 because there really aren't 7. There are 12. Some psychologists say there are 11. There have been different theories about whether it's 9 or 11 or 12. And what they do is sometimes they combine some of them. But when you break them all out, we came up with the number of 12. When you look at them, these 12 map just beautifully over what people do in workplace environments every day. So it's a great map, and it's not like this is something we just dreamed up. It's based on neuroscience research that's well documented, and there are books on this stuff. There's a book called The Executive Brain that has all the technical details of this. And there's just a ton of brain literature that supports all of this stuff.
Well, let me just read off these for the audience in case they're curious. One is self-restraint. Another one is working memory, emotion control, focus, task initiation, planning and prioritization, organization, time management, defining and achieving goals, flexibility, observation, and stress tolerance. Maybe you can give us a few examples of, you know, these executive skills in action.
Sure. This is, by the way, the best view of how psychologists believe they're developed from birth. The first sign of self-restraint, for example, psychologists believe is when babies are somewhere between, it's being developed between like 2 and 11 months old, when you make a face at the baby and the baby makes a face back, you make the same face, they have the same reaction, you do it again, and then they don't. They believe that that's the first inclination of the development of the executive skill of self-restraint. Self-restraint is basically... if you're high in it, you sort of think before speaking, and if you're low in it, and someone what's interesting is every one of these skills, as soon as you define it, someone says, I know someone who's got things like that. Every single time. If you're low in it, you just blurt something out, and you typically get your foot in your mouth all the time, and you tend to sort of just bite off more than you can chew, essentially. And so that's self-restraint. Working memory is basically, it's not memory, it's basically when you're juggling a lot of things, you don't lose track of any of them. And if you're high in working memory, you would be a person who would be able to say, go to the supermarket and you know what you're getting, you don't have a list, and you come home and you haven't missed anything on the list. If you're low in working memory, you'd be the person who
loses the list.
you have the list, and you because you were so focused on the list, you forgot that your wife said, oh, by the way, and before you come home, make sure you fill up the car with gas.
Right.
So you get home and you've got no gas in the car. And the busier it gets, the worse it gets. Emotion control is basically sort of being able to go with the flow, staying cool under pressure if you're high in that. And if you're low, you get sensitive to criticism. So someone criticizes you in the morning, and that sticks with you all day. It just bothers you a lot. Now people, being high and low in something is not bad, by the way. Everyone has two or three that are high, two or three that are low. I mean, and that's pretty much across the board. The way we look at it is, when people say, well, that's bad if I'm low in this. It's not really. It's like saying you're 5'7", but you want to be 5'6". Well, you're 5'7". You're not going to be 5'6". That is the way you're built, and this is sort of how your brain is built as well.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting things. I kept thinking, it says you can't change. And I'm going, no, wait, I want to change. I can change. And they're going, no, this is hardwired stuff.
Yeah, you can't, actually. We keep asking people. Everyone says, no, I can fix that. Okay, we interviewed people for a year, and we said, we know from our primary research that what people try to do is fix people's weaknesses in business. They focus on that all the time. And we have not found one person across the board who's done it.
That's interesting. Well, we're going to come back and talk about focusing on weaknesses or focusing on strengths. So stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Three Dimensional Wealth with Chuck Martin. Hang on.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com. or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roy Diefendorf.
I'm here with Chuck Martin, and we're discussing his new book, Smarts, Are We Hardwired for Success? And this book challenges conventional wisdom about continuous learning, self-improvement, and achievement. And Chuck, as I mentioned before, is a New York Times bestseller business author. He has extensive research in the workplace and management priorities, and he teamed up with a psychotherapist and I think a PhD and an ED and all those kind of degrees in order to come up with a book that I think is practical for business today. Chuck, well, yes. Just before we left, we talked about the weaknesses. And when people say, well, what I really like to, I like to improve. So I'll look at my weaknesses and I'll work on my weaknesses. However, in your book you said, wrong strategy.
Right.
Why is that?
Because if your weakest skill, executive skill, is, say, time management, you can go to 10 time management courses, then you go do the questionnaire, and your weakest skill again will still be time management. What we strongly recommend is you get into positions that play to your strongest executive skills, and then in the book we give you strategies to basically mitigate the problems caused by your weakest skills, but you can't fix your weakest skill. For example, if your weakest skill, time management is such a great one because it's so blatantly obvious to everybody. Someone who's high in time management, they're saying, how can you not be on time for this meeting? And someone who's low in time management says, well, what's the big deal? It's only 10 or 15 minutes. They're late. Their brain really looks at it totally differently. They actually process it differently in terms of how it fires. Well, when you get into situations of strengths and weaknesses, you don't want to be in that weak spot all the time, because when you're under pressure, your weakest executive skills fail first. So if your weakest skill is time management, and you're a job that requires a lot of high time management, you'll be an absolute disaster for time management. But what you can do is to fix a problem, because sooner or later you will have some problem with one of your weakest skills, guaranteed. What you do is you sort of step back a bit and say, What's the biggest problem my weakest skill is causing me? And in the case of time management, you might say, well, you might look around and say, gee, I always get chewed out when I'm late for that Tuesday meeting. Like, that's the one that really ticks off the boss. So what you do is you say, okay, I'm going to pull up all the stops. I'm going to have people remind me. I'm going to set alarms. I'm going to do whatever it takes to be on that meeting on Tuesday on time. Well, what happens is you then start to go to that meeting on time. It's a high, what's what we call an effortful task. It's a high effortful task to do that, but you make it to the meeting on time. All of a sudden, your boss doesn't see time management as an issue anymore, because you're on time for that meeting that he really cares about. You haven't fixed your time management at all. It's still your weakest skill, but you've eliminated the biggest problem that it causes. Then what you do is you go focus on playing to your strengths.
I think that's the real thing here, is that if you can identify your strengths, and that's really what this helps us to do. There are questionnaires in here that you can go through, and as you sort of filter through each of these 12 skills, it'll help you identify which are your strengths and which are your weaknesses. And when you look at that, all of a sudden, for me, it was like the aha.
Really?
Whoa. Oh, yeah. And then how to, you know, sort of work on the strengths and play to them, and then work around them, work around those weaknesses.
But right. That's instead of spending all of your effort trying to fix your weaknesses.
Because you do is frustrate yourself.
Well, not only that, you're using all your brain power for that, and then you don't have anything left in terms of using your strengths like you should be.
Well, you talked about the phrase was goodness of fit.
Yes. If you have a goodness of fit situation, the strengths that are yours in cognitive function match the strengths of the task or job at hand. And in the book, you did this questionnaire. It takes about 7 minutes. And you identify your strongest two or three and your weakest two or three, then there's another questionnaire where you identify the strengths required for a specific job. And you can do this over any job. And then what you do is you look and you see if you're a match for the skills required for that job. If you are a match, it's likely to be a very natural job for you. It won't feel stressful. It will use what you have, basically. And if it calls for your weakest skills, you can pretty much guarantee that will be what we call an effortful task. You might be able to do hard for you, and when you're under pressure, you're going to get in real trouble potentially because the skills required for the job are going to fall apart on you because that's the way your brain is going to function.
And then some of these you mentioned were like natural connectors, you know, they complemented each other.
Yes, there are some typical combinations of skills, and there are some typical opposites. For example, someone who's high in working memory, which is your memory sort of always on, is typically also high in focus. If they're low in working memory, they're also typically low in focus. If they're high in planning prioritization, they're typically high in observation. Observation is the ability to step back and say, how could I have done that better? How can I improve that next time around? If you're high in self-restraint, you're also typically high in defining and achieving goals. Defining and achieving goals is to be able to see the long-term goal and not letting anything get in the way as you get towards that goal. That's one of my highs, actually, by the way. So I never knew why I always did. I've done my 7 books. I've never missed a deadline on the book. But I never knew why. It was very natural for me to hit deadlines, and the editors would always say, you're actually going to get that on time? And you've dealt with publishers, so you know they're astounded if they get a deadline, a manuscript on time. And it's never dawned on me to be late. But I didn't know that was actually the frontal lobe of my brain managing that. It wasn't just coincidence. So typically, if you're high in time management, task initiation, focus would all go the same way. And if you're low in time management, you'd probably be low in task initiation, focus. So if you're low in time management, task initiation, focus, you probably don't want to be working alone in a home office because you're going to end up basically you're not going to get started, you're not going to do things, you'll end up drifting through the day, and you'll say, where did the day go? Now, in terms of opposites, typically, if you're high in flexibility, which means you sort of go with the flow and you can deal with changes, no big deal, you're typically low in time management. And if you're high in time management, you're typically low in flexibility. So, which is, by the way, why no one is high in all 12, because there's just some very natural opposites. Typically, this is one of my favorites. If you're high in working memory, which means your memory is always on, you're low in organization, so your desk might be kind of a mess. So if you're high in working memory and low in organization, you can't remember where that piece of paper is, but you remember what's on it. If you're high in organization and low in working memory, you can't remember what's on that piece of paper, but you know where you put it.
Both of them sound like you're in trouble.
well, but you know where it is if you're organized. You may not remember what was on it, but you know where to find it because of your organization skills.
Well, that was part of the thing, you know, of building the team. Then what you want to do is find somebody that can complement you.
That's exactly right. And typically, by the way, the spouses who are successful, they typically have complementing skills.
Actually, when we did this, I was on an airplane, so I was reading this. I said to my wife, Chris, I said, do me a favor. I said, I just filled out this questionnaire. I want you to put, I circled them. I said, I want you to put a box in all these things, and I want to see what you think. So she goes through and does it for me, and she was basically in agreement of, you know, these are the things that have the best strengths, and these are my weaknesses. And then she said, and I'm exactly opposite. I said, well, I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, my wife and I are too, because my lows are time management and working memory. So we'll be going somewhere, and I'll be just thinking of something else and miss an exit. And it used to be that she would say, how could you miss that exit? We've been here like 5 times. I said, well, I missed it all 5 times. I wasn't really paying attention to that. I'm paying attention to something else. But now, because you know about your highs and lows, you start to say, okay, she'll say, you know you're taking the next exit, right? Say, oh, yeah. because you start to understand, it takes away all the conflict of what, because you didn't know before. You just know that you always miss exits. Well, that's a conflict. But when you say, oh, you miss exits because you're low in working memory, that's a totally different discussion. It's a totally different viewpoint. Because it's how your brain functions. It's not something you want to do or you're doing intentionally. It's the way your brain is actually working for you.
I'm just looking at page 59, and you talk about ranking the executive skills. Of course, now you've ranked them for yourself,
right?
And you know your strengths, your weaknesses. But then, for every task or every project, you now say, wait, let's go through and look at the project and rank them and say what's needed in order to best accomplish this project, and then you can stack it up against either yourself if you're going to work on it or the team that's going to work on it.
That's right.
To me, it was brilliant.
Yeah, well, thank you. And until now, there's been no way to do that.
That's
so
right.
What you do is you put together a team. I don't know, what do you think? Who's using it?
Who's available?
Yeah,
that's a bad way to do it. Yeah.
Oh, let's get the group we had last time.
Yeah.
They seem to get along together. Well, what happens is you get a group together, and I'll give you a couple of classic examples. If you put a group together that's really high in the skills of, say, flexibility, which is sort of kind of rolling along and being able to change, observation, where you really can do a lot of planning and say, how do I do this better, planning prioritization. Oh, no, that doesn't matter. Let's say, and they're low in focus. Well, what happens is they get together, they have these brilliant, brilliant brainstorming sessions. I mean, they're just fabulous ideas, and they go on and on. They go over deadline. They're late, and they come back, and you say, that's a brilliant idea. How do we pull this off? And they say, oh, we don't really know, because they don't have the executive skills for execution. On the other hand, if you put a group together who is all strong in focus, task initiation, time management, they come back with something that's great executable with a lousy idea.
Well, that's where I think that as we go through and we finish out the hour, we're going to learn more about then how to map the rest of this with your values in your company. So I want you to stay tuned, because Chuck Martin's going to be back with more of his new book and more of Three-Dimensional Wealth.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
We now return to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roy Diefendorf. Direct your questions and comments to www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now the host of Three-Dimensional Wealth, Roy Diefendorf.
Welcome back, and I'm here with Chuck Martin. And Smarts is his new book. And Smarts sheds light on how 12 brain-based capacities or capabilities fully develop and essentially unchangeable by young adulthood determine each person's unique combination of strengths and weaknesses. That's what it's about. And so we talked about some of these, what they call executive skills. Why is it, though, that when I'm at the office, I can go one way, and when I go home, I can't do anything. I'm great at executing in the office. I go home, I can't get my honey-do list done.
But
what's the problem, Chuck?
We actually surveyed that, too. We asked people, how are your skills? I mean, your brain is your brain. Your brain goes with you everywhere you go, typically. I mean, sometimes you might not think it does, but for some people. But what happens is, at work, your frontal lobes, where your executive skills reside, in some cases, there are what we call external frontal lobes, where you might be really low in the executive skill of time management, but you have assistants who are saying, okay, it's time to go to this meeting, okay, time to write this report. So they really are being your time management skill, so you don't really have it. As a result, you look like you're running perfectly on time at work, and you are, and you go home, and your time management's an absolute disaster. It's because it really was sort of faked at work. But if you have an environment where you really are using your skills, say your skill is task initiation, that's your high skill, so mm-hmm. you don't procrastinate, you really get going. Well, when you get to work, I mean, you just hit the ground running. I mean, you're just like bang, 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 starting everything. Sometimes by the time you get home, and it might be after a 10-hour day, especially with a lot of people working today, or 11-hour day, you've really got nothing left. And to go home and say, okay, I'm going to start a project, I don't think so. That doesn't mean you're low in task initiation. It just means you're tired. And you've got, basically, you're exhausted and have nothing left. And that, we found that from interviews, that in a lot of cases, that's what it is. But if you are home and charged like you are at work, you would typically say, okay, I'm going to go start this project now. And you would be just like you were at the office.
Okay. One of the things you mentioned with your weaknesses, good idea to be the first one to identify your weaknesses.
Yes, by time your colleagues or your boss or your subordinates, by time they identify it, it's sort of too late. So, because what they're saying is, they're not saying they've identified that you've got a specific executive skill weakness. They're saying that there's a problem that's causing that is really big. If it's big enough for me to mention it, this is a big problem, and you better really deal with that right away. But if you're going to acknowledge your weakness to a superior, what you want to do is make sure you acknowledge your strengths as well. So you can go to your conversation and be something like this. You know, you're going into the executive VP and say, you know, I know I've been sort of losing focus on some of these things. That's one of my weakest cognitive functions. However, you may notice that I've been really contributing because I'm very high in flexibility and observation. So I'm really contributing a lot more on the idea front for new business development. So all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay. And then what happens is the superior says, they acknowledge it, oh, well, you've identified it, that means you're working on it, so I don't have to worry about it. And it really, it takes away the conflict and the pressure in the environment. And that's real key in many of these cases. It's that things can sort of mushroom off of one of these things that get out of control. We had one case study in the book where there was someone who, he was a pretty high executive. He was brought in, and two of these other executives were saying, you've got to keep the CEO apprised. You're not communicating well. And ultimately, they spent $20,000 sending this guy to courses. They spent 6 months working with him, and they ultimately fired him because what happened was it turned out he was low, and they didn't know this at the time because they didn't know about executive skills. He was low in organization and working memory. As a result, when something was really busy, which is when the CEO who he worked for needed the information, this person would simply forget things. They would fall through the cracks because it was that one thing he didn't remember to say or to notify the CEO, and he didn't really have an organization for where this stuff was. So he didn't have a system. As a result, the CEO kept getting blindsided in the market, and he just couldn't afford it. So they really had to remove the person, which is what they did. And once we told them, once they understood executive skills, they said, oh, this would have saved us so much work and money and resource because it wasn't a fit. It wasn't a perfect fit situation. It was sort of a mismatch between the job and the person or the person's executive skills.
There was a section, too, that kind of piggybacks on this. When you talk about firing somebody, most places they go, oh, geez. Guy's not doing the job. It's just not working. I got to fire him. But you know what? Let's give him a shot. Let's try and help him. Yeah, and they try and work on his weaknesses.
That's right.
And of course, what you're doing is you're just beating a dead horse.
Well, very often what happens is people tend to hire people who have the same executive skill, strengths, and weaknesses that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, in a typical interview situation, and everyone knows this, where two or three or four people do separate one-on-one interviews with the candidate, and then they all get back together and they say, oh, what did you think? I really liked him. What would you think? I liked him, too. Well, they're an executive skills match. What they're doing is they're matching their executive skill strength to the candidate as opposed to measuring the requirements for the job against the candidate. So if the job requires things like task initiation, focus, time management, if these people are low in those skills and they're high in flexibility and observation, they're going to like the person who comes in and has a lot of brainstorming ideas, and they're really thinking ahead, and they can just move all over the conversation, drift from one thing to the other. So they hire a person who's perfect for a fit for them, and then they get into the job, and they've got the exact opposite executive skills that are required for that job. And then all of a sudden, they don't want to get rid of the person because they all made the decision. And because the executive skills match, they tend to like the person. They get along, mm-hmm. Which makes it even worse because now you've got to remove someone who you all like because they're just like you.
But the fix, though, Chuck, is not fixing the person. It's then either changing the environment or changing the task.
Right.
And what really sort of is amazing to me sometimes, and I'll watch, people who have been complete failures at a position go some other place and blossom, or vice versa.
Oh, that
they've hit a home run, and they go, gee, he'll be great here, and they put him over, and all of a sudden the light bulb went off. I said, wait a second, this guy didn't change. I mean, he didn't lose anything.
That's right.
They must have just mismatched him at the next place.
Great observation. Here's the classic example, and I'll give it to you both ways. Someone who's the best salesperson in the world. They are just spectacular at sales. They get promoted to the sales management, and they're an absolute failure. And everyone has seen this. It's very common. It's because the skills required for sales are flexibility, to deal with the customer, emotion control, not losing the cool of the customer, and defining achieving goals, keeping your eye on basically the sale. Sales management, on the other hand, requires the cognitive functions of organization, time management, observation, step back, how to make everyone do their job better, and planning prioritization. They're totally different. So what happens, though, if someone is in sales and they're not doing well, it could be that they are high in the executive skills required for sales management. So they don't get promoted because they aren't selling well. The great irony is they could be the best person for sales management because of an executive skills match. It's a very fresh way to look at how the brain works in relation to how people function at the office.
Well, as a hiring tool, I mean, Chuck, this thing I think is fantastic.
Well, we had someone in advance, as you know, we always do. We research this stuff to death. When we had the draft manuscript way back last year, we sent it to 25 people around the country for an advance read, and we actually had people. One company called back. He actually called. He said, "Look, we're hiring three people right now. I need the questions now. We weren't done that chapter yet. Can you send me the questions now so we can use those for the interview before the book comes out?" That company has since bought a ton of books, and they're now deploying it company-wide. Because what happens is when someone recognizes their strengths and weaknesses, you don't go back because that's how you're going to be for forever. And what it does is it changes the language inside the business.
See, I think that's terrific because the way I was just saying, I said, I'll work around it. I can change. I can be different. If I understand, that's what I'm. Okay, now you operate and the steps you take are completely different.
That's right. That's exactly right. It is so
not wrong, different.
Right. Yeah. And what we were doing before wasn't wrong. We just didn't have the template and the knowledge to say this is how the brain actually functions. And it's really amazing when you ask someone. Anyone who's say skeptical or cynical about this stuff, well, I don't believe these tests and all this stuff. Well, if you ask someone who's high in say task initiation, they always start stuff. If you ask them, well, when did you start being high in task initiation? Was it a meeting you went to? Was it a course? Or at what point in your life what was the trigger that made that happen? And they will invariably say, well, I've always been good at that. Or if they always procrastinate, they probably procrastinated growing up. It's your brain is your brain. I mean, And you say, well, when was the turning point where you, you know, you started, you know, procrastinating? We'll say, well, I was always like that. And that's sort of the truth test. And that's what this whole thing about smarts is. It's really common sense also. I mean, this has been, my co-authors have actually done seminars on this at Harvard for other clinical psychologists who have done the same questionnaire that we have in the book. I mean, the instrument that's in the book has been in the market for about 3 years now. So it's not just a pile of questions we made up. I mean, this has been it's been done by literally thousands of people, and every single person who has done it, who I've talked to, has said they do the questionnaire. They say that's me, but they never knew why. So it explains. It's a lot of the why that especially a lot of your audience will be experienced business people. It puts everything in context of here's the template of this is why that happened 6 months ago. This is why this happened at this point in my career. And this is what I should do now. We try to make this very practical so people can take it and actually do something. Because as you know, I'm not really big on theoretical stuff.
Yep.
well, cause I think there's a lot of bad or not bad, but misleading information or information that might be right, might not be right. We like to do stuff that we really know is right. So we try to be pragmatic. So we interviewed a lot of people. We tested a lot of people. And all of that is in the book, so people can say, oh, this is how somebody else did it. This is what I should do, and this is how I should really plot out my career from here forward.
Well, and then you come up with you know, the basic strategies to improve the goodness of fit by either, you know, changing a person's behavior or changing the environment, and those are real positive steps. But you're not changing the person.
That's his brain, right? That's exactly correct. There are two things you can do. You can modify the behavior and modify the environment. If you modify the behavior, it's much more difficult than modifying the environment.
Mm-hmm. Chuck, this is terrific stuff. We're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to be back up to wrap up the show. So stay tuned with us. Thanks.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management, financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
Chuck,
Chuck Martin is with me, and Chuck has completed his book. It's just out, I think, this past week. It's called Smarts. Here's a quote. Rich in insights and packed with targeted advice, Smarts is a welcome book for everyone eager to work better, with less stress and more satisfaction, and those striving to attain their true potential for excellence. Boy, if that's not a bestseller, everybody's going to be lining up for that one, Chuck.
Yeah, we're pretty happy with the results of this one. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, all of it is. You know, it always looks easy from the outside. But even with the little book that we did on three-dimensional wealth, you talked about deadlines and things. I mean, it was more work than I had anticipated going in. Hey, where do we get a copy of this book, Chuck?
Any bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Borders. Amazon, of course, is shipping them out by the box loads. I think I told you we've got 10 five-star reviews at Amazon, and those were not written by my family. Just
that's what I was going to ask next.
No, there's actually one by the CFO of procurement for Walmart on there. And we have a testimonial from the co-author of Freakonomics. I mean, some really, really impressive folks have dialed into this, and really, they really get it.
Well, it becomes so simple. In fact, it's something that you can implement right away. I said, I was on the plane, I'm reading this, and I'm going, you know, I'm thinking about hiring someone in the office, for the office, and before I had read this, Chuck, I'm going, well, let me think. I kind of like this person. I think it's okay. And then I go, wait a second. If I go down and think of the tasks that we need to have done and then map the person that's got those strengths, and there's somebody there that'll map those strengths, if I have a goodness of fit that's right on, boy, it's going to be a much better situation all around.
That's exactly right. And what it does is it takes this guesswork out of hiring and promoting. Because you don't know. When you think about it, you're basically hiring somebody in your gut instinct and your past experience. And sometimes you'll be right, sometimes you're wrong, as an individual. With this, what you're doing is you're saying, these are the skills, the cognitive functions that I really require in this job. Okay, I'm just going to interview. And in the book, we actually give you the questions to ask of
right.
the candidate. And if you're the candidate, we give you the questions to ask of the boss, of the hiring person, to see if their job is going to match what you have. Whoever knows this when they're interviewing with someone who doesn't know it has an enormous advantage. Because even the job candidate, if they know it and the person hiring them does not, that job candidate will know it way before the person hiring will know if that's going to be a good fit or not. If they see that it requires their strengths, then they should really push hard to get the job because they're likely to succeed.
You know, when I look down, you were mentioning these questions. You know, if you think about it, you say, well, these are the three areas that I really need. All I need to do is open up to the book and say, hey, these are the flexibility questions that I need.
That's
do you
right.
find it easier to be flexible in some situations more so than others? Describe both easy and hard situations, you know, you can talk about. And so they've got usually three, maybe four questions. And so you're going to pick out, obviously, the strengths
right.
that you're looking for. And
it's not something that somebody can fake either in an interview, because they're open-ended questions. You say, well, give me an example from your last job where you whatever, and then you get examples. You know, how did you behave in this situation? Not how would you? How did you? Because you really can then determine. We give you a grading on how to grade how that person is likely to be, whether they're going to be really good at it, medium, or pretty bad, in terms of how they fit. So it's a lot about measurement, and it's not psychoanalyzing somebody either. It's just basically just acknowledging how their brain is.
Yeah, or that's right. Talk about the values of a company, because I thought that was a good ending section, and then I want to talk about this cognitive bandwidth. But
oh,
the values of a company.
Well, what happens is a person has the right executive skills that match what is the right job in an organization. And they find out they're not getting promoted, they're not moving along, but they're doing their job well, and it's the right job for them. It could be that they are not in the role of what is valued by a company. For example, the company may value, despite what they might say, well, we're a sales organization. Well, if they're a sales organization, there are specific executive skills that they value. And if they're a bottom-line-oriented company, there are specific skills, defining achieving goals, focus, planning, prioritization. We have all these laid out in the book. And if you don't have those skills, then you're probably not going to go far in the organization. You could stay there, but you're probably not going to move up and along with the other people who are what they value, because that's what's going to matter. You also, if we look at it a different way, if you're in a job where you're kind of moving through jobs because you're being promoted, you can take a risk and get into a job where it does not necessarily require your strength, as long as you know it's an interim job, as long as your strengths are aligned with what a company values, because you will be basically a company culture fit. It basically just gives you a way to map a real company culture through how a brain functions. And we give you this overlay, so it's really a three-dimensional, I like a three-dimensional wealth, like a three-dimensional view of you and your skills, the job skills required, and then the skills valued by the company. Again, these are skills of cognitive function, not skills of how you do something.
Your last chapter, reaching and dealing with cognitive bandwidth.
Oh, I just
boy, that got me. That hit me right in the gut, Chuck.
Yeah, there's actually something that's a very real thing called exceeding your cognitive bandwidth. And as a business person and writer, coming across some of these psychology terms I just loved it. Because psychologists talk about this stuff like it's nothing. It's just common stuff. But business people, it's not normal. What happens is your cognitive bandwidth, your executive skills, the 12 skills, they can only handle so much. And what happens is if there's information flowing so fast, like it is these days, and you're trying to process all of it as if it's equal, and you just take in more and more and more, and you're getting more and more overloaded, your executive skills, starting with your weakest skills first, break down right after the other. It's like bang, bang, bang. And basically, your frontal lobes effectively shut down. They effectively break down so that you really, I mean, your brain is still there and everything, but you, without your cognitive function, your executive skills, which is what manages the intelligence of the left and right brain, you can reason, you can think, you can do all those things, but you can't really execute. You can't really manage, and you can't manage your activity, and you can't manage what it is for work right then. The very good news is you can recharge very quickly. You just go take a breather, go out, you know, just go for a walk around the hallway or something, and just basically shut off the information for a short bit, and then you're back to normal and start all over again. But exceeding your cognitive bandwidth, that is basically the effect of what is a true information overload. And it's a real thing. It's how your frontal lobes actually function.
Oh, when I read that, I mean, I could feel myself when I get to that point. And it's just like, you know, and then I can't find anything
on my
desk.
Well, what are you low in organization?
That's one of my low ones, yeah.
There you go.
It's one of the many.
But once you know these things, when you start to see, when you start to, as an individual, start to say, well, I can't find anything, well, that's sort of your clue. That I'm probably reaching my cognitive bandwidth. I need to step back for a second here.
See, what I tried to do, Chuck, is work around that by having filing systems, organizing, because I know that I'll be in that position. So I try to, you know, come up with schemes in order to keep me on track.
Well, that's good too. There are a lot of things to do to deal with things like that. But once you've exceeded your cognitive bandwidth, you're basically out of luck. I mean, there's nothing you can do. That your frontal lobes are essentially turning off on you. They're saying, give me a break, and you need to give them a break. And people see this in other people as well. So they will know, for example, if so-and-so is really low in stress tolerance and low in time management, well, when under the gun, it's, you know, the numbers are due and everything is coming to a crisis point, everyone's going to say, "Well, stay away from that person because she goes crazy at this time of the month, or this time of the year, or this time of the quarter when all these numbers are due. She's just, you know, take your head off if you go in there screaming at you." Well, that's a weak skill manifesting itself.
Let me ask you just one question. In this, you talked about best time of the day. Most of the productive time of the day is either, you know, early in the morning or after 5, and the least productive time is between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. And I'm
That's
thinking,
right.
Every time I call a meeting, you know what I call it? When the best time of the day is. I'm thinking, you know, 8 o'clock, 9, here's we're going to have our meeting. I'm thinking, maybe I should be calling our meetings at 11 o'clock or 1 o'clock when it's the most, you know, least productive for most people.
Or
just curious
up
what other
golf,
people do.
I don't know. We've done that survey now 2 or 3 times over the last 5 years. And it's always the same. Business people are most productive before 9 and after 5. And what happens is other people who work with them discover that that's when they're coming in. So then they start coming in too. And it's terrible because it's stretching everybody's day. People are trying to get in alone to do work before 9, so then other people are getting in so they can have access to that person as well. So then it just keeps getting stretched and stretched. But yeah, 11 to 2 is dead time.
Chuck, what would you like the listeners to take away from Smarts? Last soundbite here.
I think that they need to understand that this is a real thing in your brain of how you actually work. And once you know your strengths and weaknesses, it is an enormous advantage for your entire career.
Chuck Martin, I'm one of your greatest fans here. I'm glad you've been on today.
Well, it's mutual, Roy. Thank you.
Great book. Do yourselves a favor and go out and get it. And come in next week. Join us at the same time for more of Three Dimensional Wealth. Thanks for listening.
Voice America Business thanks you for tuning in to Three Dimensional Wealth with Rory Diefendorf. Please join us again next Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for more tips and strategies for achieving total wealth management on Three Dimensional Wealth, right here on Voice America Business, the bottom line in business talk.
I get that reaction all the time.
I'll send